Welcome to the Uncommon Career Podcast, helping you to find God's calling for your career and to land a fulfilling, well-paid, and impactful position. Join me each week for practical guidance, career motivation, and biblical insight based on Christian values. Hey friends, we are back, and today we're talking to a former Army Ranger turned corporate leadership coach with 21 years of experience, and he's going to talk to us about the deprogramming necessary for a meaningful work environment. He's going to share how leaders can help tired team members reach their potential, how to identify a real and true toxic leader. And he also shares a story about how hatred for the Lord turned into a God-ordained love story. And of course, his thoughts on being a servant leader and on hearing God's call for this next season of his life. If you're a new leader, a small business, or a large corporation in need of team building and professional relationship skills, stick around because you may just want to hear what Stephen Jarvis Morris has to say. All right, Stephen, it's good to have you. How are you doing today?
I am fantastic, Patricia, and I am so excited to be here. How are you?
You know, I'm doing really good. I'm excited to have you here too. I was checking out your website. I was taking a look at everything, and it's just awesome. It's really good to see people focused on leadership and especially bringing leadership principles to, you know, to the marketplace where they really should be the strongest. And sometimes we need to see some of that leadership come up. So I just wanted to start the conversation by just asking you what you do. Tell the listeners about Renowned Leadership.
So basically, what I do is I train, coach, and mentor leadership and individuals. I also will work on the corporate level and reviewing and helping revise management training programs and employee retention programs. But the biggest thing I focus on is the individual. And, you know, leadership is one, we're all called to be leaders. I don't care if you're a stay-at-home mom or whatever. I believe that every single human being on this planet needs to be a leader, and that everyone has influence. It just depends on how you use that influence. You know, so I want to help people focus that influence so they can get the most impact out of it. Mm-hmm. And if we want to change the world, you know, that's the only way we're going to do it is through leadership. And, you know, God gives us the blueprint of what a good leader looks like. Yeah. So if we just follow that blueprint that he's laid out for us in the Bible, then, you know, we're going to succeed. And that's the only way I can see us changing the world.
You mentioned kind of, you know, leadership and pulling principles from the Bible. You also mentioned employee retention programs. I mean, tell me what you see is happening in the workforce, in the corporate workforce right now that needs attention.
Employee retention, I think the biggest problem. So back in the 1950s, when our parents were kids or our grandparents were working, work was a family atmosphere. And just to give a good example of this, just yesterday I was on TikTok of all places. I don't know even why I get in that sewer, but I was on TikTok watching videos, and this dude gets on there. Mm-hmm. And he was on a profanity filled tirade about how it's a minimum wage job, blah, 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 you know, and just expressed how much he hated work. And then, so there, I just paused the video. I didn't even want to listen to him anymore. I watched like 30 seconds of it. And so I went into the comments and saw how many people agreed with him. He had, I want to say, about 10,000 comments. And I didn't find anyone that disagreed with me. And that made me so sad because this should be family. Why shouldn't it be family? When I was in the Army, I spent years with these guys compared to months that I spent with my family. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, how is that not my family, right? Like I have my family. But then these people that I spend the vast majority of my time with, shouldn't they be your family too?
Yeah.
So it's heartbreaking to me that is the situation. And I feel like that's the situation everywhere. No one feels like they're truly a part of a family. And I think that's because corporations have corporatized the family slogan, if you will. I just did air quotes for listeners, like, they've corporatized the family, so it doesn't feel genuine and it doesn't feel realistic anymore. the employees don't feel like they care, they don't feel like they matter, and they don't feel like they have a voice. So when you work for a place where that's the situation, of course you're not going to be happy, and of course you're constantly going to be looking for something better. If your employees are constantly looking for something better, it's just a giant circle of life, basically, where you get new employees, they work for 6 months, and then they quit. And when you get into that cycle, there absolutely is no camaraderie within your organization, and it's a very hard slump to get out of.
No, and it's happening, right? It's been happening for a long time, but this pandemic brought everything to this, like, what is it? Like the Great Resignation and all of that. And so, when someone's leaving an organization where they're just not happy, be it whatever organization it is, because it's happening across the board, what do you think, in your opinion, and as a leadership coach and someone who can go in and change this and turn this around, what would you do to go into a company and say, okay, we need to make some changes? What are some things you would recommend?
Well, the first thing is we get rid of the corporatization of basically everything. Look, have you ever worked for a company and they had the employee of the month thing and everybody got around and fake clapped and fake smiled and fake cheered and fake pretend to be happy for you? It felt fake, right? You know
And the
why?
pictures on the
Yeah,
frame
yeah,
and on the
yeah.
wall.
Totally fake. Why does it feel fake?
Well, I
Because it
think if it's not
is.
genuine, right? Like in some places it might be genuine, but I think a lot of times it's just the thing that has to be done. Like they've
Right,
got to
because it's
pay
corporate.
someone. And it ends up being sometimes the same person. I don't know if you've noticed, sometimes it's the same person, like
But
over and over.
the problem, and that's the problem, is it's the corporate mandating it. So when something is mandated, that takes the genuineness away from it. So when the corporate says, hey, walk in and smile. So Amazon, and again, I'm not trying to bag on Amazon. Amazon is a great company. But one of their big things is for their managers, they always have to be positive. Like they coach their managers to always be positive, which is a great thing to do, except when it's not genuine. If it's not real, if they're faking being positive, if they're faking that smile on their face, we can tell when someone's genuine or not. So, and that just goes to destroy the structure and the trust in the organization. Because do you trust, like if you go onto some website and you're like, oh, this is a cool product. And then you look around a little bit and you're like, oh, I don't know if I trust this. Are you going to buy it? No, because you don't trust it. If you don't trust your organization, you're not going to feel safe. If you don't feel safe, why would you want to work there?
Yeah. So
So,
how do you, well, like you just kind of blew my mind right now. So there's this idea that, hey, you should be positive. You should recognize people. How do you bring that positivity and that recognition and that family feel when it's like it shouldn't come from corporate? It should be like a natural, genuine thing. Like, how do you foster that organically?
It all comes to your leadership. It all comes to training. And that's the biggest drawback I see in the corporate world right now. We take college students out of college, we give them a job, they excel at their job. Why do they excel at their job? Because they just spent 4, 6, 8 years learning how to do their job. And they're straight from that course. So it's fresh in their minds. Of course, they're going to excel more than likely. But did they get any leadership training while they were in college? Did they get any leadership training while they were in high school? Are they going to get leadership training at work? Probably some, but again, it's corporate. It's corporate mandated, so it's a check the block thing rather than a genuine, let me mentor you from a leader that's been around for 20 years. So it's not, again, it comes back to all being genuine, and it's not genuine. So whenever, excuse me, whenever you have this ungenuine feel to everything, what you have to do is you have to train your leaders. Like, look, one, don't overuse good job. You mentioned COVID. One of my biggest pet peeves, and you might look, if y'all hate what I'm about to say, my email address is sjmorris@renownedleadership.com. Email me, leave Patricia alone, because I'm probably going to tick you
Oh, here we
off.
go. Here we go.
But look, During this pandemic, all you see are signs of, doctor's offices or whatever says heroes work here. Now, look, nurses are and doctors are great. They do an amazing job. They're incredibly skilled. I love what they do. I have no problem against it. But doing your job doesn't make you a hero. A firefighter running into a burning building does not make him a hero. He's doing his job. He gets paid to run into that burning building. Doesn't make him a hero. Now, if he gets hurt and pays a sacrifice doing his job, that's what makes him a hero. I was in the army for 16 years. People are like, "Oh, you're such a hero. Thank you for your service." I'm not the hero. I came home. I get to be with my family. The heroes are the ones that never came home, the ones that pay the cash that check. So don't overuse the word hero. And my point of all this rant, I'm sorry.
No, not
My
at all.
point, my point of it is don't overuse good job. Don't
Yeah, and
overuse you could do better. Don't overuse pat on the backs. Don't overuse these things. Let's save them for when it really matters.
it's
If
that
someone
concept
come,
of empty compliments, right?
right, if someone comes to work and does their job, then you say, "Hey, thanks for doing your job today." If you feel like you need to say anything, just, "Hey, thanks for doing your job today." That's it. Did they excel? No. Did they do subpar? No. They just did their job. Thanks for doing that. Thanks for doing what I pay you to do. I would, me personally, as a leader, I wouldn't say that. But I mean,
So it's like truth and honesty is genuine. Like
right.
coming from a place
And
of truth and honesty as opposed to just like those empty. You know what? I don't know. In PE, we used to always get, the stars. And even, you know what I'm talking about, right? I would always get the green star and then I would erase it so it would turn silver. And I'm like, look, I got second place. But the point is like everyone got a star. I didn't do anything. I did nothing. And everyone's like, gold star. And I'm like, that cheapens like the actual accomplishments of people who have done something. And so I can see what you mean by it becomes like disingenuine.
Right. And so, and that's really what it comes down to. We have to train our leaders. We have to train them to think differently. Especially in the corporate world, because as kids this day and age, we're taught that, and it was starting whenever you and I were going through school, not so much, but it's in full swing now of everybody gets a trophy, like you were saying,
That's
everybody
true.
does a good job. That's all fine and great until you get into the real world, and corporate don't give a crap. If you
Yeah,
do a
they need
bad
you to do your
job,
job.
yeah, if you do a bad job, you get fired. There is no second place. Like, it's either you do your job or you get fired. And so, we kind of set our young leaders up for failure in that regard. So we kind of got to deprogram them and be like, "Look, not everybody does a good job. Not everybody is meeting their standard. Not everybody is working to their best potential. Those people don't get recognized for doing subpar work. People that just do their job don't get recognized for doing a great job when they're just doing their job. So we have to deprogram it and make it more genuine, in my opinion.
No,
Again,
and I
all
think
hate
that's,
mail to me.
but I think it's true that like being honest, is what creates that genuine peace, which I think is a huge step. So it's like our first strategy is like be honest in your compliments, and not everything deserves a compliment, so that the things that do deserve a compliment are actually meaningful. And so let's say you've got that employee, because I like have seen it. I've been that employee where you're just like in a rut. So you're in a rut, and you're probably in a rut because, your team reflects its leader. And so sometimes if you have that where it's like as a leader, you're constantly creating this environment where everyone gets a trophy and there's no differentiation between the employee that is needs to be recognized and appreciated for going above and beyond and the employee who's doing the bare minimum. And if you're that employee and you're like, you know what, I'm just in a rut. I'm not motivated. I'm not, there's a time where it's time to move on positions, but there's also that time where it's like, okay, something needs to change and then we'd be fine, right? What do you tell that employee who's in a rut? Like, how do they, is there a way that they can manage upwards? You know what I'm talking about? Like, manage their manager or somehow bring that to light?
So employees are a little bit different than leaders. I was all prepared to answer that from the leadership
Oh,
perspective,
well, tell
not the
me from a
employee
leadership
perspective.
perspective.
So from a leadership perspective, the first thing you have to recognize is you have to understand can this employee improve? And you have to be 100% honest and non-biased, because if you've had confrontations with this employee before, your automatic bias is going to be no, this employee needs to go. But that's not always the case. Like, just because you're having issues with this employee, they could be a great employee. So first thing you have to do is understand, can they improve? And if they can, then you need to take steps to improve, help them improve. And it just depends on the situation. It could be simply mentoring, or a big one I see, are they bored? Do they need more responsibility? Do they need
They're
more
probably the
challenge?
best employee, and you're just not
Right.
actually challenging them in the right way.
Exactly. Do another big one I hear is they don't feel like they have a voice. They don't feel like they're heard, and they don't feel like they matter. If you have those three things, yeah, of course they're not going to be good employees. Why would they? Where's their motivation to be good employees? So from a leadership perspective, you really just have to look at it and say, okay, can I save this relationship or not? If I can, then where's my problem coming from? Are they bored? Do they need more responsibility? Or, whatever the case may be, there are a million different situations that it could be. From the employee's perspective, if you're an employee and you're finding yourself in the rut, you kind of got to ask yourself the same thing. And I did a podcast about this the other day, about toxic leadership, because I hate that term. It's just like hero. It gets overused, and now it's lost complete value. If you're a bad leader, you're a toxic leader. If you hurt my feelings, you're a toxic leader. If you don't give me the day off, you're a toxic leader. And I'm so sick of hearing people say toxic leader.
So
Just
what is
because.
it? Like what is if you know, 'cause a lot of these terms that have lost their meaning over time, like for example, gentleman is one of those terms. Right? Everyone's called a gentleman. And I'm like, well, no, there was an actual finite definition of what that meant. But how would you define the actual definition of a toxic leader? How does someone know if they're actually working with a toxic leader?
A toxic leader is someone that they're going to be completely self-absorbed, completely selfish. They're going to be completely disengaged. You're going to, if you feel like like if you died in a car accident tomorrow, and this leader would not care, that's going to be your toxic leader. It's, I guess that's a bad example, but
No, that's that. Yeah, I know someone who had cancer and went to their boss and was like, I'm terminally ill. And they were like, oh, so you're not gonna be able to work here. When would be your last day here? Like, that was the only question they asked.
right. And that person would be a toxic leader. A good example of a toxic leader I got from our good friends Nanette in Virginia. I was listening to them talk
The
about it.
Lively Office, right?
Yes.
Yes, Lively Office.
They were talking, and Nanette, or I'm sorry, Virginia was sharing a story of a leader that they had a family day on a weekend for the whatever organization it was. And the leader was meeting the families and the children and the husbands and the wives. And this person told Virginia that, I'm so glad I'm able to fake a good smile, because this is absolutely horrible. And
What?
when I heard that, it was just like, man, what a toxic leader. If that is your mentality as a leader, you need to step down as a leader, because you are ill-suited to be in a leadership position. You have to genuinely care about your people, and man. So as an employee, to identify if you're working for a toxic leader, it's examples like that. Do they care about you? And be honest, because I know a lot of people that are going to say, no, my boss doesn't care about me. But yeah, they actually do. You just get your feelings hurt, or you're sensitive, or whatever, and
So it's almost
you
like
don't
there's
feel.
some What is that? What is the word called? Like, there's some grace on either end where it's like, you just because you have an employee you don't agree with or that they're in a rut doesn't mean that, oh, they've got to be let go. And at the same time, just because a manager doesn't seem to have, like, you know, a ton of interest in what you're doing doesn't automatically mean they're a toxic leader. So it's sort of like a give and take.
Right. So in my last corporate job, I actually got called a toxic leader quite a few times. But keep in mind, I was fresh out of the army
Okay.
when I was working at this corporate job. And I was kind of running it like they were all soldiers, which civilians
Okay.
kind of have a little bit of a problem with.
Okay, yeah. So tell us, like, for those who haven't been in the military, like, share with us a little bit of the differences between, you know, military and the corporate world.
Not a difference in leadership. The only difference is the language, the way I speak. So in a civilian job, it's, hey, would you mind going to whoever's office and picking up this document and bringing it back to me, please? And in the military, it's like, hey, stupid, go get that, bring it back to me now. Like,
Okay, so it's
it's
very
just,
like directional, like
yeah.
very straightforward.
That's really the only difference, and that's really the only problem they had with me is the way I spoke to them. And thank God really blessed me because he put me with a boss.
Yeah.
His name was Eric Ferreau.
Shout out to
And
Eric.
this dude mentored me all the way, and he was retired Army as well.
Okay.
So he
That's
totally
amazing.
understood what I was going through, and he was completely
Wow.
patient with me. And he would pull me into the office and be like, look, Steven, we cannot talk to people like this. Like,
Wow. So
you're in a
he kind of built
civilian.
this bridge.
Yeah, he mentored me through becoming a civilian leader. And, you know, a lot of people think military leadership is just screaming and barking orders. And it's not that. It's just, like you said, it's direct. It's
Yeah.
very direct. It's not polite. And so I had to re kind of format my leadership style to be in polite society, if you will.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, Eric really helped me through that. But a lot of people call me a toxic leader just because they didn't like the way I talked to them. But what they didn't know is I would sit in Eric's office and argue with him for hours on behalf of my guys
Wow, so you'd
or
advocate.
girls. Right. I was a bullet sponge for them. Anytime something stupid came down from corporate, you know, from higher, it's like, hey, let's hold on. This is stupid and this is wasting my people's time.
Yeah.
Let's, and you know, some stuff is just like, hey, shut up and do it. And that's, you know, sometimes that's what I would get told. And it's like, all right, guys, so this is what we got to do. But, you know, I would say 50% of the time I was able to save them from half the nonsense, you know.
Yeah.
So,
Which is,
and
you know, that's
that,
what a manager should do, right? Is
right.
kind of navigate this process between upper management and the employees. And like we were talking about earlier, like part of creating that really good atmosphere and family-like environment is the advocacy that you are taking on for your
Right.
employees.
Right. And so, towards the end of my work with that company, I actually kind of got away from the reputation of being the mean, toxic leader. As people, you know, I started to change the way I spoke to people and became a little more friendly about it.
Yeah.
And then once that happened, I started to realize, like, oh wow, Steven really does care. And
Ah, there it is. He's not
right,
so bad.
so, but again, it kind of set me up for failure because my counterparts, you know, they were all, hey, good job today, great work today. Like, he just did his job. How to, like, and I would never do that. So it's like, you know, once they realized, like, I was just a different type of leader, I got away from that toxic mentality, I guess, but it
Or you
is
mean
what it
like
is.
they weren't thinking of you as a toxic
Yeah,
leader?
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Wow.
yeah. And so, you know, for employees, though, really be honest with yourself and just, do you suck? Like, seriously, ask and be honest, be brutally honest. Because if you want to change, that's the only way you're going to change is to be brutally honest with yourself.
Yes. Take that. You know, sometimes there's moments where you have to acknowledge, hey, I'm in a rut. So let me take responsibility for the outcome and for my actions and things, you know, and try and get out of that rut. Interesting. Wow. So I want to kind of like switch gears because you've got
Uh-oh.
an incredible story, and I think it's awesome to hear where your leadership perspectives come from, but it's also important to like understand where they come from, like understand kind of how everything came about. And so tell me a little bit about your time. You mentioned earlier when we talked, you mentioned that you were an Army Ranger, and then so walk us through your journey from where you started and then how you got to the leadership, and it kind of, paint that story for us.
So, the first thing you need to understand is I was raised in a very Christian home growing up. I was homeschooled until I was in the sixth grade. The music I listened to was Keith Green, Don Francisco, Phil Driscoll, like all these old school Christian artists. That's how I was raised. I only got to watch an hour of TV
No
every day. No, no,
Metallica
no, no. So my upbringing was, and I was committed like to Jesus as a kid. So then I joined the army, and 9/11 happened, and war ensued. And after seeing some of the craziness that I saw, and going through some of the craziness that I went through, and I've had so many friends commit suicide that it's just insane, and watching what that does to their families.
It's heartbreaking.
I didn't lose my faith. I believed in God and I believed in Jesus, but I kind of started to hate them. It was like, how can you let these horrible atrocities, all the horrible things I would watch Iraqis or Afghanis do to each other. Not just us doing to them or them doing to us, but doing horrible things to each other. It's their countrymen, and they're still killing each other, and it was horrible to watch. And so I just developed this very keen hatred for God, and it got to the point where my family wouldn't even try to talk to me about it anymore, because they knew the more they pressed me, the more damage would be done to our relationship. So they just kind of let me be. And so that's pretty much how I lived my life. And then I got shot
Oh, shoot.
three times. And
Was this
that,
while you were out on
I was in Afghanistan, and almost died several times. And so after that, I couldn't serve in a combat environment anymore. So the army put me with this leadership training program, and I got sent to Europe to teach Na our NATO allies about what in the army we call it the NCO Corps. So you have commissioned officers and you have non-commissioned officers. Commissioned officers are generals, captains, majors, those guys. What their job is to plan and facilitate. So, and then a non-commissioned officer's job is to train and lead the mission. So officers plan the mission, facilitate the mission. Non-commissioned officers train the soldiers for the mission and then lead the mission.
I see, and you were doing the training.
So I was a non-commissioned officer, a sergeant first class. And the reason I tell you this is because the way the United States does it is very different than the rest of the world. The rest of the world, the officers are in charge of absolutely everything. Every soldier, like they're in charge of every little minute detail. In the U.S. military, the officers are in charge of some, and the non-commissioned officers are in charge of some. It's split, so all the responsibility doesn't fall on one person. And like non-commissioned officers, we have what we focus on. Officers have what they focus on, and then it comes together, and we work together to get the mission done. So the rest of the world, after watching us in Iraq and Afghanistan, seeing how our NCO Corps worked, they wanted to know a little bit more. So they started talking to the US higher ups. And so they sent a team to just kind of go give them classes on this. So I got to be a part of that team, and it was absolutely amazing. Teaching leadership was one of the funnest things I've ever done in my life. And I fell in love with it. And plus, I had such great mentors in the military. Anyway, so fast forward, did that. Then after 16 years, it's time to get out. So I got out and I took a corporate job, and we already talked about how that went. It was rough at first. While I was at that job, I met my now wife, who is the most beautiful woman in the world.
Yes,
And
yes, yes.
do you want the whole story on
Yes,
that?
can we?
So I was sitting in the parking lot of getting ready to go into the office, and I see her for the first time and getting out of her car, and she's 5 foot tall, 100 pounds. And I was just like, man, she's the most beautiful woman I've ever seen in my life. And like drooling, basically, watching her walk in. And like, as she got into the building, I was like, you know what? Like, I'm just an average guy. She can have any guy she wants. I bet she's the most stuck up girl in the world. And so I just wrote her off completely and was like, I'm never even going to talk to her. And I decided to leave her alone. So a couple months later, she got promoted to a position that didn't work for me, but I had to kind of work with on very few occasions. And so I was asking my buddy, like, who got that job? And he's like, I don't know, it's that Ekaterina girl. I'm like, who is that? He's like, you've seen her. I'm like, I ain't seen nobody Ekaterina. And so a couple of days later, she walked by our office, and he was like, oh, that girl just walked by. So I stick my hat on my office, and this is so embarrassing. I can't believe I'm about to tell you this. So
Say
I
it.
stick my head out of the office, and I look at her, and I realize who it is. And man, like, just starstruck again. And I poke my head, or I go back into the office, and I look at Jordan, and I was like, man, she is beautiful. And he was like, yeah, she's okay. And I was like, dude, nah, she's beautiful, man. And one day she mentions Jesus. And I was like, oh, that was the dagger to my heart, man. Like, she's one of those Christian Jesus freaks. And so it was like, you know what? I really like this girl. So if she's okay with me being me, I'm okay with her being her. So I decided to try to work it out. And so we kept talking. And then so things actually got serious. And I asked her one day, I was like, Katie, what do I have to do to get you to marry me? And she's like, you have to love Jesus Christ as much as I do.
Go,
Dagger
Katie.
to
She's
dagger,
bold.
dagger to the heart again. I was like, oh God, why? And so I was like, all right, well, I love her, so I have to try. And so it was a rough while after that. It was rough.
What do you mean
And
rough? What do you mean by that?
because I was trying so hard, but again, it wasn't genuine, it was fake. She could tell. And so she didn't trust it. Until one day I had, and I don't know what everyone believes, this was just my experience, don't judge me. I was working one day, and it was kind of like an out of body experience, or kind of like, I don't even know how to explain it. I was working and communicating, but I wasn't there. I had this vision, and I was in the dark, in the cold. And it was dark, man. Like, you couldn't see your hand like an inch from your face. It was blinding darkness, basically. And it was bitter cold. It was biting cold. And so I could tell people were around me, but I couldn't see them. And it felt like it was a lot of people. And then all of a sudden, I saw this light, and it got brighter and brighter and brighter. And as it got closer to me, I could see it go up to people, and I could see like their silhouettes, and I could see them run away from the light. Everyone was running away. So that scared me even more. And I'm talking fear like I've never felt in my life. And so finally, this light goes up to this one character. And all of a sudden, as it gets closer, I realize it's Katie. So I start screaming at her, and she can't hear me. And I'm like yelling at her, telling her to run, and she can't hear me. And so once the light gets to her, it just kind of reaches out and puts its hand on her cheek, and I realize it's Jesus. And so, funny fact about that is I remember feeling so jealous that Jesus was touching my girl. But
That's so interesting, right? You're
But
like, get off her.
yeah. And I'm yelling at him like, Katie, run. And like they start talking and laughing, and she's just completely at peace. And then he says something to her and then looks at me and smiles. And as soon as he did that, like I remember like that fear that I felt, that I've never felt fear like that before, just got multiplied by 10. And like
Wow.
my heart's racing. Like I just can't even tell you like how it felt. I can't describe it. It was just, it was scary. And so he takes a couple of steps towards me, and I start to back up to run. And then he stops and he looks at Katie and calls her over to him, and she walks over to him and he takes her hand and they talk for a minute. They laugh and then they both look at me. And then he says something to her, lets her hand go, and she starts walking towards me. And so as she walks towards me, I realize that she is surrounded by light too, but it's a different light. Like it's blinding, just like Jesus's light is, but it's not as blinding, I guess, is a way to describe it. It's just different. And so she gets to me and she takes my hand and she's like, it's okay, Stephen, don't be scared. It's just Jesus. He loves you very much.
Wow.
And I was like, Katie, we gotta go. And she's like, no, honey, we don't. We're where we're supposed to be. And then after she said that, like I was kind of still trying to back up and pull her with me, but I couldn't. For some reason, wasn't strong enough to move a 100-pound girl. And
That's how it is, and that's how it is in these moments, right?
so Jesus gets to me, and as he gets to me, all the cold goes away and all the darkness goes. I can't even see the darkness anymore. Like it's just everything is gone. I can still see the people, but I can't see the darkness and I can't feel the darkness anymore. And that's something I forgot to describe to you, is that I felt like the darkness was trying to pull me, like not down or away, just pull me in every direction. Like it was just pulling at me. And once I got into the light, I couldn't feel that pull anymore. I was free and I could see, and I was warm. It was a kind of warm, like you could lay down and go to sleep without a blanket, kind of warm. Like it was comfortable. And Jesus, he didn't say anything to me. He just took my hand and put Katie's hand in mine and then turned around and walked away to go save more people. And that's when I kind of snapped out of it and I was like, what just happened? And so after that, it was like, okay, Jesus, you got my attention. I'm back. We're good. Like
That's amazing.
kind of like a I'll forgive you if you forgive me kind of thing. Like, and
Like a reconciliation.
yeah. And I talked to a preacher about it and my dad. And it was like, I feel kind of stupid because I literally said that, like, God, I'll forgive you if you forgive me. I was like, that seems pretty bold to say that you'll forgive God. And that my dad told me, and this preacher told me, that it's not crazy at all, because I felt slighted by God. Even though God did nothing wrong, I still felt slighted. And so in order to get that away from me, I had to forgive. And it may not be forgiving God, it may just be forgiving myself, but like that's the way it came out. And so it's okay. Don't feel guilt from that. It was perfectly healthy and perfectly normal, and I did the right thing, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah.
That's amazing. And people, like, at the beginning of your story, you said something like, oh, don't judge me if this and that. Like, but this is the reason why these stories need to be told, is like this happens, and I feel like hearing these stories helps us with our unbelief. You know what I mean? Like those people are like, oh, does God exist? I'm not sure if he does. Or, and just kind of hearing that this happens, it's like, no, God exists.
That's the whole reason renowned leadership exists, is because God did it for me.
So
Because
tell me, yeah, tell me more.
so I didn't like very early on after I left the army, I knew I needed to do renowned leadership. I just didn't know how to do it. And so Katie and I got married in February, and
Congratulations.
thank you.
Congratulations,
And
Katie.
so we got married, and When was it? June, I think. I come home from work one day and she comes running up to me and she's like, "So, there's a thing." I was like, "What thing?" She's like, "It's called Life Surge." I was like, "What's that?" And she was like, "It's a Christian conference." I was like, "Oh, okay." And she loves Christian conferences. I've never been to one, and she wanted to take me to one so I could experience it. And I was like, "Okay." I was like, "Where's it at?" She's like, "Cincinnati, Ohio." How far away is that? I was like, "That's like 2.5 hours, dude." And she's like, "It's okay, we can make the drive." I'm like, "Okay." She's my baby. I'm not gonna tell her now.
You're like, if
The
you want to go,
two,
I'm gonna go.
I'm not. So I was like, "All right, we'll go." And so then I looked at the tickets, and the only tickets that were left available were like $250 a piece or something like that. I don't even remember, but they're just stupid. They were far more than I would ever pay for something like that. But then it was like, Katie wants to go, so whatever, I'll pay whatever. So we go, and she found this on Facebook. And the reason I say I know for a fact God exists is because I would have, like, even if I had seen that, I would have never. It's in Cincinnati. I live in Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm not making that drive. It's ridiculous.
It's not something you would ordinarily do.
Yeah. So, and especially once I saw the price of the tickets, I'm not going to pay for those tickets. That's ridiculous. I don't care if she wants
Yeah,
to
that's
go,
really
like
expensive.
that's stupid. I'm not doing it. But the fact that she saw it and she wanted it, that kind of melts my heart. I can't
It's
tell
that
her no.
moment
So,
again where Jesus is like
right?
taking her hand, taking yours, and he's like,
Yeah. So, we go to Life Surge, and it wasn't just for me, it was for her too, because Katie, one of my biggest pet peeves with the Christian community is the Christians have to be poor mentality.
100% agree with you on that. 100% agree
God,
with
the
you.
Bible, and people like to misquote the Bible verse that says, money is the root of all evil. But that's a misquote because the Bible doesn't say that. It says the love of money is the root of all evil. So you can have as much money as you want. As long as you don't covet it and love it, you're fine. It can't corrupt you. Once you start to love that money, that's where the
And place it
corruption
above
comes.
Jesus.
Right, that's where the evil comes. So we don't have to be poor. So Katie was always kind of this mindset. And we went to this Life Surge and Myron Golden was there.
Oh, so good.
And Myron Golden is awesome. And I knew who he was before we went there. And I was actually excited to see him. So, man, he gets up there and talks, and he talks about this stuff. And Katie's like, I've never thought about it that way because, and let me tell you what he said. This is so amazing. He said, the most selfish thing a Christian can do is be poor. I was like, wow, that is a bold statement right there.
It's
He's
true.
like, think about it. If you're poor, what can you do? Who can you serve? Everything in life requires money. He's like, you can't truly serve people if you don't have money. I'm like, man, that is so true. And he broke it down in so many ways. And it's like, okay. So Katie was kind of like, okay, maybe I need to rethink this. And then, I got to meet Shane Sams, who is like, so you have this idea of this business. This is how you're going to do this business. And I'm like, oh, this is what I need. And so we go back home after Life Surge and we go to church the next day, and there's a guest preacher that neither one of us knew was going to be there. And this dude pretty much said the exact same thing as Myron Golden, like almost word for word. And it was just like, you ever had that when God's trying to tell you something and it's just like he's punching you in the face with it over and over and
Well, I
over?
don't know about that, but I do get those moments where it just comes from everywhere. Like everywhere
Yeah,
that I go,
like
it's the
just
same.
nonstop, just listen to me. And so Katie and I talked about it, and it's like, okay, so man, this is something we need to pay attention to. So then a couple weeks later, we went to that what is it called? Income Surge with
Income
Shane
search.
Sams. And it was just like, man, like this is the path that we got to go on. So, and again, none of this would have happened if I had seen the Facebook advertisement for Life Surge. We would have never
It had to
gone.
have been Katie.
It had to have been her.
Wow.
And So, like, God took us there. God
That's awesome.
shaped our minds to accept what we needed to hear.
Yeah.
And we heard it. And then that's how we got started. That's how Renowned became
so
Renowned.
Amazing. Okay. So, you know, as we start to wrap this up, tell me a little bit, like, if you were to encompass Renowned Leadership in 1 to 2 sentences, like, what do you want? What's the message that you want to put out into the world with Renowned Leadership?
Leadership training doesn't have to be expensive. You can get quality training. It may not be the amount of training you want, but you can still get quality training with us for an affordable price. When you talk to people, they're like, yeah, I can't afford it. And yes, it is expensive. Like, if you want my 21 years of experience, it's expensive. I won't deny that, but there is still, you know, God put it on my heart to help new leaders. And I know new leaders don't have a lot of money. So I found a way to make it affordable. They still get plenty of value to continue to move up. You know, for the new leaders, I focus on team building and building professional relationships, because those are the two most important things a new leader can do, is build a solid team around them and then build good, solid personal relationships with everybody within their organization and or team. So that's what we really focus on with new leaders. I know that was a lot more than two sentences. I apologize.
Yeah. No. I mean, I think it's still really important, because whether you're a manager or an employee, you need those leadership skills either way. So I think that's awesome. So you've got this calling, this assignment that you're like, hey, I'm bringing affordable leadership skills to small businesses, to managers, to employees, because everyone can be a leader, like you mentioned earlier. And so you, even in those moments where you were away from God, like, well, first you went into the military, you're having this experience where you are a hero. You did, you know, suffer and sacrifice for your country, and you had this experience. And in that moment, because of that major sacrifice that you made for your country, like, you doubted God, you hated God, and you were like, how could you let these horrible things happen? And so then you kind of go through all of this, you know, these phases, and to see it come around, of all people, through Katie, like, to see, you know what I'm saying? Like, how your calling is coming not just through the work experiences that you had, which sometimes is this thing that, like, oh, let me look back at my work experience. But for you, it was like this, like, wraparound of your entire life, where God was like, let me orchestrate all these different pieces of your life, including your marriage, and then use Katie and use your relationship with her to then also bring you into your calling that you're doing now. So I just wanted to, like, in my mind, sort of, like, bring this story to a full, like, full circle. And it's just beautiful how, you know, even in those moments where we're not happy with God, when we're mad at God, when we hate God, even in those moments, he's still orchestrating a way to get you into your calling and to kind of, like, love you back into his interrelationship with him. You know, I think that's amazing.
You know, I think I was supposed to hate God. Like, I think that was part of the learning experience. Like, I think he planned that as well. He knew it was going to happen. Of course, he knew it was going to happen, but it was something I had to go through in order to have the constitution to do what I'm doing now. Like, because let me tell you, when I got out of the army, I was so depressed, because I left everything I loved. I left everything I knew. I thought my life was over. I weighed 220 pounds when I left the army. And like a year and a couple months after that, I weighed 300 pounds. I gained 80 pounds in a year.
Wow. And this is, like, after you left the army?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I just got, like, it was horrible. And then, so that just made my depression worse, because I hated myself. And, you know, I'm back down to a slim 235. You know, I'm getting back down to 220. Thank you. It's taken a lot longer than a year.
Wow.
But but I'm getting to where I love myself again. Like, I had to go through all that experience to be able to shape my message the way it's shaped.
Yeah.
And all of that, even the fact that I hated God. And let me, I don't want there to be a misconception. My program isn't it's not a spiritually based program. A lot of my program, I do draw from the Bible, but I don't necessarily advertise that. And Katie and I both prayed about it, and that was how we felt God wanted it to be, kind of like sowing seeds rather than harvesting it, if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah, so it's just the principles, right?
So I don't want people to think that if they go try to if they hire me, they're going to get,
A
a Bible verse every day, because that's not what I do.
sermon.
But that experience of having to hate God and then having to forgive all of, later, that taught me valuable leadership lessons that I'm able to convey. And so, I mean, just every single lesson that God has put me through, every single hardship he's put me through, even recovery from after I got shot, that brings understanding to my life, because, getting addicted to morphine, having to get unaddicted to morphine, just everything, like every experience was for a reason. And now that I see that, I appreciate it. But like you said, for the longest time I didn't, I hated it. And it was a rough life. It was hard.
But you know what? Like, it reminds me of how you were mentioning, not to like go back in after we're like wrapping it up, but I know you were mentioning that these hollow compliments, right? Like, to me, there's this parallel in that moment where like you hated God and God's like, just give it, like, I'm not afraid of this deep moment. I don't want your hollow, like, when you were with Katie and you were kind of do it, but not really in it. That's like the equivalent of the good job. That doesn't really mean anything, right? And I feel like
100%.
God's not afraid of your hate or your anger. He's not afraid of your hurt. And to me, that's like just so interesting, right? That you recognize at the same time that, hey, you don't need to say good job because it means nothing. And it's like the same thing where you're like, you don't need to pretend like you love God. Like, if you're angry, if you hate God, like, you have to go through that time period and be honest.
So here's a question for you, and I don't know the answer to this. So if you do, I'll be very impressed. How many times in the Bible did God tell someone that they did a good job?
17. I'm just kidding.
Really?
I
Oh,
don't know. No, I have no idea. But you're
it's not
right.
very many.
No.
It's not many.
It's not many, and there's a reason for that, I'm sure.
Yeah, because we were just doing what we were supposed to do. We didn't get Jesus went above and beyond. That's why he got the good job, right?
Amen.
Abraham,
That's true.
Abraham was just doing what he was told to do. He was just doing his job. And he didn't do a very good job of it at that. He was a liar.
Yeah, except for Jesus, everyone else like has some sort of sin or
So I
something,
mean,
some sort of failure.
so God, that in my opinion, like that's why he doesn't do it, because we don't deserve it. We haven't done a good job. So we don't get told a good job. We don't get that pat on the back, the coveted POB.
Which is
Like,
different from like love. Like, he loves us no matter what.
right. Because
Yeah.
a leader loves his people. And it's funny especially when I'm in a corporate setting and I say that, like, you're a leader, you're a manager, do you love your people? I'm like, what? Like, HR problem. It's like, no, do you love your people? I'm like, well, I guess. I'm like, well, you should know, because a leader loves his people. Like, every single soldier that served under me, I loved them. I would give my life for them.
That's
Every single
servanthood.
one, even if I didn't like them. Like, there were plenty that I didn't like personally, but I loved them because they were my soldiers. They were my people.
That's a
And
servant
so,
leader. That's exactly
right.
what that is.
And so if you don't love your people as a leader, like, you need to do a heart check, because you should be loving your people. And once you love your people, everything else is easy. Everything else will come naturally. It'll come easy. It really just love your people, man. I mean, think about it. If you love your people, that person you were talking about that went to their boss with cancer and they're like, I'm terminal. Like, what kind of tool says, well, so how long can you work? Like, how heartless can you be?
Oh, it
There
was
was no
absolutely
love.
heartless. Absolutely
So,
heartless.
but if you flip that coin and that leader loves their people and comes in and says, I'm terminal. Well, what's your reaction then? Oh man, what do you need from me? That's the first thing I would say is, I am so sorry. What do you need? What can I do to serve you? Because your life sucks and it's about to get a lot worse. So let me make it as comfortable as I can. Let me do at least do something. So, I mean, and that's the difference is you just have to love your people.
That's awesome. And so we'll end it on that note. You got to be a servant leader. You got to love your people. That's awesome.
100%.
Thank you so much for joining us. Give one last shout out to your business. Tell us where we can find you and wrap it up with that.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to come check out what I do, get in touch with me. Go to renowned, RENOWNED, leadership.com. You can also email me at sjmorris, MORRIS, at renownedleadership.com. I answer every single email that comes to me. And also, there's a button in the top right corner of my website that says book now. You can book a free consultation with me, come learn something from me, see what I have to offer in person. I'd love to talk to anybody and help anybody that reaches out to me. So reach out to me and yeah.
Sweet. All right. Well, thanks again for coming on the show. We'll see you on the next one.
Thank you so much.
So, did you enjoy the episode? If you did, then head over to theuncommoncareer.com where you can listen to other episodes of the podcast, and you can also sign up for the Uncommon Hour. This is a preview of each week's podcast. A little bit of career guidance, a little bit of biblical principles, and of course, if there is a resource that comes along with the podcast episode or with anything else that I'm doing, you get it firsthand. So again, head over to theuncommoncareer.com and I'll see you there.